the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
But the task is to look at Habakkuk. So welcome back to part two. I hope those of you who weren't here, actually if you weren't here, Nick has some of these handouts. So if you put up your hand, it might be useful. These handouts explain a video that we watched last week by the Bible Project. They're great videos that give a summary of books. They're particularly good for obscure books like Habakkuk. We're not going to play it again tonight, but if you want to go home and see it, Irene's saying she wanted. We're not going to play it again tonight, but if you want to go home and see it, then just Google Bible Project and Habakkuk. It's about 6 or 7 minutes long, and it'll give you a great overview of the book. It's basically an animation of this sheet. So last week we looked at a little bit of the introduction, and we looked at the first two squares on the left-hand side. This week we're going to look at the rest of chapter one, the bottom two squares on the left-hand side, and we're going to look at that rectangular section in the middle. That's the most of chapter two. And then next week we're going to tackle chapter three. Just like to say, I take on board what Nick said about sequels and trilogies. I'm hopefully not going to go for The Matrix. I'm going to go for Paddington tonight, because I think Paddington 2 is better than Paddington 1. And Mark agrees. So we're going to go for a Paddington 2-like part 2 of Habakkuk. So last week, just to recap a little, we were reminded that it's good and helpful and necessary to come to God with the things that we don't understand, and that's what we have just been doing. We need to lament like Habakkuk did in the first few verses of chapter 1. And we also learnt that God says to Habakkuk, I've got this. I'm in control. I've got this. So let's read what happens next. If you'd like to take a green Bible, it's on page 889, and we're going to start chapter 1, verse 12. So page 889, Habakkuk chapter 1, starting at verse 12. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Let's just stop there a minute. The them in this is the Babylonians. Habakkuk has cried out to God, there's so much injustice in the people of Judah. What are you going to do about it, God? And God says, I'm going to send the Babylonians. And Habakkuk starts off going back to God with this. He says, Lord, you are from everlasting. It's a really good way to start going back to God. He says to God that he is everlasting. He is holy. He is just. And he is the people's rock. He is their security. And that's a great way to start. When we come to God, we remember what kind of God we come to. Habakkuk then goes on to basically say, what? What? You must be joking. I mean, yes, the people of Judah are bad, but come on, the Babylonians, they're even worse. So let's carry on reading. Chapter 1, verse 13. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You have made people like fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet. And so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? Habakkuk says, God, you know that the Babylonians are cruel and evil. They don't worship you. They worship the tools that they use to catch others and to destroy others. Babylon was a conquering, hostile military nation, and they worship their own strength. So Habakkuk is at a loss. And then we read what he does. He goes to the ramparts. He stands watch. He goes back to God, and God answers. So let's carry on reading. We'll read the whole of chapter 2 now. I will stand at my watch. This is what Habakkuk is saying. I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. Then the Lord replied. He replied again to Habakkuk. Write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and it will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, he is puffed up. His desires are not upright. But the righteous will live by their faithfulness. Indeed, wine betrays him. He is arrogant and never at rest, because he is as greedy as the grave, and like death is never satisfied. He gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. How long must this go on? Will not your creditors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their prey, because you have plundered many nations. The peoples who are left will plunder you, for you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, setting his nest on high to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork will echo it. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labour is only fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbours, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk, so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink, and let your nakedness be exposed. The cup from the Lord's right hand is coming round to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. The violence you have done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you. For you have shed human blood, you have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Of what value is an idol that someone has carved, or an image that teaches lies? For those who make them trust in their own creations, they make idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to the lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. God is answering Habakkuk again. He's answering again. He's saying again, I've got this. And you're going to write it down, because it's going to happen. I see what you see about Babylon, but the righteous will live by their faith or their faithfulness. In the centre of this little book that is almost in the centre of the Bible, is a great text that actually sums up the whole of the Christian life and the whole of the good news of Jesus. But the righteous will live by their faith. The second part of verse 4 in chapter 2. But the righteous will live by their faith. This phrase in Habakkuk is actually quoted three separate times in the New Testament, by Paul in Romans and Galatians, and by the writer to the Hebrews. So the title of this talk is God fair? I don't know whether you come expecting me to answer that. I don't know whether you come knowing the answer yourself. Is the answer yes? Is the answer no? Is God fair? Maybe. Is God fair? Sometimes. Well, the answer is the righteous will live by their faithfulness. That's the answer that God gives us to whether he is fair in our eyes, from our perspective, or not. The righteous will live by their faithfulness. This is the answer God gives Habakkuk, and this is the answer that we have to cling to. This small little phrase is quoted in Romans because the book of Romans is about righteousness, about being justified, being right before God. It's quoted in Hebrews because Hebrews is all about faith. Faith in God, faith in Jesus. And it's quoted in Galatians because the letter Paul wrote to the churches in Galatia is all about living by faith in Jesus, not living by following a set of rules. So I wonder this evening, how long have you got? We need to study Romans, Hebrews, and Galatians to really understand this passage of Habakkuk. So how long have you got? I saw a few of you sigh then. It's great truth and great depth, and we're not going to cover it all even in 100 sermons. So don't worry, I want to get home too. So all I'm going to quote from is two New Testament passages, one in Romans and one in Hebrews. This is the one in Romans. Remember last week I told you that Habakkuk, ancient scrolls of Habakkuk had been found near the Dead Sea, written about 100 BC. And I like to think that maybe some of these scrolls were the actual ones that Paul read as he was studying the ancient scriptures to understand what the coming of Jesus meant for the church at that time. So these are ancient words that Paul studied, and he reframes them for us who live after Jesus. And he says this: I am not ashamed of the gospel. That's the good news of Jesus, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, for the Jew and then the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. God tells these words to Habakkuk, but unlike Habakkuk, we get the full revelation of God. We live after Jesus. We get to understand through Paul's writings and through the writings of others that the way to become righteous is to live through Jesus, to live with the help of his Spirit. But we mustn't forget that we worship the same God as Habakkuk. We wait for the same God on the ramparts to speak to us. And God's standards for righteousness do not change. And we can see what they are in this chapter, in chapter 2. God says to Habakkuk and to the people of Judah, the Jews, I've got this. I know what the Babylonians are like. They're not righteous. They're puffed up. They're greedy. They're never satisfied. Write it down, Habakkuk. My people are going to be judged by the Babylonians. But I'm going to judge the Babylonians as well. All in good time. So Habakkuk writes down these five woes. Did you notice them? They're like verses in a song, not a particularly cheery song, it has to be said, but they are five verses in a song. And each of these show what our everlasting and holy God will judge. They are like taunts against the unrighteousness. And I think that we can think of these like four types of bullies and one type of idol maker. This book is rooted in history, as we've said. The Babylonians really did destroy most of a nation called Judah. They were an aggressive military nation. But Babylons have existed throughout history, and they still exist, don't they? We still see them. Also, these things we see, these four types of bullies and this one type of idol maker, are behaviours that describe nations, but they also describe cultures. They can describe families. They can describe individuals like you and me. So we're going to look very quickly at them. I'm going to start by focusing a little bit more on the classic bully, and then we'll rattle through the rest. And I hope that you will see how relevant words that were written 500-600 years before Christ are to us today in 2018. So let's look at the classic bully. This is in verse 6 to 8. The classic bully steals, extorts, and plunders. They use their strength to get what they want with no regard to others. This is not the behaviour that God approves of. This is not righteous, and he will judge by retribution, by revenge. It says, the peoples who are left will plunder you. And history tells us that it is true, doesn't it? Evil regimes don't often last more than a generation or so. People force change, and regimes that rely on classic bullying are inevitably brought down, unfortunately often to be replaced by new ones. But we've seen this throughout history, haven't we? You know, I've been doing a little bit of reading about William Wilberforce and the slave trade, and how the French Revolution really got caught up in that. And the aristocracy in 18th century France didn't treat people very well, and it fell. The aristocracy in 19th century Russia didn't treat people very well. Franco's Spain didn't last. Pinochet's Chile. Mugabe's Zimbabwe. Kim Jong-un's North Korea will change. It will. I know it seems hopeless at the moment, but it will change. It might be, as we've seen recently, by the act of the Chinese government cutting off the supplies of oil, or it might be by some other way that we don't know and we don't understand. And it may be not in the timing that we would want. People are suffering in North Korea. We need to cry out to God about that. It may not be in the timing we want, but God will judge the classic national bully. He will. I think also the description of a classic bully can be true on a more personal level. We clearly see that we mustn't get what we selfishly want by superior strength, intellect, will, or tactics. My husband Gary sometimes tells the story about how, as a grammar school educated boy, he would try to get what he wanted from his mum by superior arguments and superior education. I don't know if you recognise that. But pretty quickly, his dad would intervene and do something like this. Oi! Oi! I can't do the voice, it's not deep enough. Oi! That's not how things work around here. You don't get what you want by flashing your superior education and your superior arguments. And we may well be in those situations where we're tempted to use our strength, our natural gifts, our natural force of will, our eloquence, our wealth, our popularity, to get what we selfishly want. And that's not having a faith That's not living by faith in a God who is everlasting, holy, and just, and our rock. He will provide, not our own strength. But the righteous will live by faith. The next two, the boardroom bully and the mafia bully. The boardroom bully is someone who sets their nest on high. They're in a higher position than most people, and they escape the clutches of ruin, like it says in verses 9 to 11. They use ordinary people's labour and small wealth to accumulate large gain for themselves. This is not right behaviour before God, and they will know shame. God will shame them. That's not the way of the righteous. The righteous live by faith. They don't have to accumulate gain at the expense of other people. I've called the next one the mafia bully. I think this is organized crime, verse 12 to 14. You know, those who establish themselves by crime, now that may be civil crime, it may be moral crime, will experience the fire and flood of God's glory. That's not how the righteous live. The righteous live by faith. Remember, God has got this. We don't need to use crime to get what we want, where we want to. And that might come in all sorts of subtle forms and subtle temptations. The next one, verse 15 to 17. Let's call this the playboy or the playgirl bully. And I think this is a message for our times. And the next one is as well. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbours to expose them and laugh at them. In our culture today, it can seem funny and laughable to get other people drunk or to encourage them to be drunk so they provide us with entertainment. This is not how the righteous live, and God will expose this. God says through Habakkuk, you will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink and be exposed. And we need to remember that again in all its subtle forms. We need to remember that really living is not being entertained by other people's shame or stupidity, but living in righteousness. God, remember, is everlasting, holy, just, and he's our rock. He's the one to look for to give us full, abundant lives without the need for any form of drunken entertainment or any form of entertainment that comes at the cost of shame to other people. The righteous live by faith. And then the last one, I think, is also particularly relevant for us, the idol maker, verse 18 to 20. The idol maker is a little bit more attractive than the bully. The idol maker seems tolerant. You make your idol, and I'll make mine. I trust in my creation, you trust in your creation. It's a very tempting trap to fall into, I think, for all of us. To fill our own security with our own creations, whatever that might be, our career, our image, our self-improvement. But God says there's no value or guidance in worshipping the things that we make ourselves. I love this phrase, they are without breath. Why would we do that? Why would we do that when we can worship and have as our rock the everlasting, holy, just one who created everything? One day God will silence all those other things, all the idols and all the idol makers. The righteous will live by faith. It's so relevant, isn't it? Everything that we've read in chapter 2. And it just seems to us that, well, it certainly seems to me that these five woes, this rather tragic song, is just the way of the world. It's the way of the world that we see around us. And certainly some of these are the way that I naturally operate. And I'm sure it's true for you too. Living by faith is easy to say. The righteous live by faith. That's very easy to say. But it sometimes seems impossible to live. And yes, it is impossible. It is impossible to become righteous ourselves. It is impossible to stand against these things in our own strength. It's impossible on a personal level and on a national level. You know, the whole nation of Israel, Israel in the north, Judah in the south, had so many advantages, didn't they? They had prophets like Habakkuk. God spoke to them. He gave them clear guidance on right and wrong. He gave them the law. And they still failed to be a righteous nation. It's kind of reassuring in a depressing way. Because I know I'm just like that. And I'm guessing you're just like that. We can be corrupted. We can be seduced. The people of Israel, the people of Judah, and us today need a better answer. And we find that answer in the description of what faith is like in Hebrews. This is the second place where this little phrase, "the righteous will live by their faith," is quoted in the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 10 verse 35 to the first little bit of Hebrews 11 verse 1 says this: "So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you've done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. For in just a little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith. And if he shrinks back, I will not be pleased with him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but those who believe and are saved." We believe in Jesus and are saved. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. My confidence actually in who God is, my faith in who God is, grows when I read books like Habakkuk that were written so long ago. I read that God doesn't change. His standards don't change. And my confidence grows when these words that were written 500-600 years before Jesus are quoted in the New Testament. And we can be confident, like the writer to the Hebrews says, because Jesus is coming and the righteous live by faith. The righteous don't live by the bullying and idol making that God will ultimately judge. And we become righteous through Jesus. And we work on these things with the help of his Holy Spirit. Tim Keller, the American preacher, says, "Faith is not primarily a function of how you feel. Faith is living out and believing what truth is despite what you feel." I've lost a bit of the end of that. Faith is not primarily a function of how you feel. Faith is living out and believing what truth is despite what you feel. In Hebrews, in that great book of faith, we get loads of examples. If you know it, you can read it in chapter 11 of the ancients, of people who'd gone before who acted in faith. And they believed and then they acted. There is not a single example of someone who didn't have to do something to work out their faith. So I wonder what we are going to do. What do we have the faith to act against? I'm sure we can pick something, either personally or nationally, from this list. Are we going to act against the classic bully, the boardroom bully, the mafia bully, the playboy or playgirl bully, or the idol maker? Hebrews encourages us to have confidence in who we are in Christ and not to shrink back. You know, we might need to act on an individual level and confess where we go wrong and turn away from some of the things we do. We might need to act against nations. Maybe we need to go home and look on the Amnesty International website and find a person who's imprisoned unjustly and write to a government about it. You may also be sitting there and knowing what God is calling you to do in faith. He's spoken to you and he's calling you to act because the righteous live by their faith. Yet Habakkuk didn't understand lots of God's ways. He didn't understand why it took so long. And we don't understand why it took so long. Why is there so much suffering in the time between God showing who he is and God coming again? And we don't always understand. But we know that through Jesus, we can live in the way God wants us to live. And we can stand against and not shrink back against all these things that we read in chapter 2. Habakkuk said, why and what? He questioned whether God was unfair. Why the Babylonians? Why do you let them do this? And God's answer was to him the same as it is to us. The righteous will live by faith.